I will be certain to pay her a visit.
The general winks at me. Why would you visit Natesha? I ask. Devon draws a deep breath through his nose. The general chuckles.
Young Viraji, let me give you a word of advice from a man who has known the Raja many years. Do not ask questions.
I tilt my head and return his condescending tone. And I will advise you to stay away from the Raja's women.
Kalinda, Devon warns.
I scowl at him for taking the general's side. General Gautam flashes a cold smile at Devon.
Still haven't learned how to keep a woman in line, have you, son?
Devon goes stock still. My eyes widen, and I glance from him to the general. They share the same strong chin and dark brows, the same thick shoulders and long arms. Devon told me that his father is a benefactor and an officer. The general is his father.
A pleasure to meet you, Viraji.
General Gautam bows without lowering his chin.
I will offer your regards to Natesha.
The general strolls into the receiving hall. Devon's firm silence repels my questions. Asha steps forward, and we clip down the corridors after her. I glance at Devon's stony expression and replay our meeting with the general. I still do not understand what General Gautam was doing at the temple, or why he would visit Natesha. We turn a corner and enter my bedchamber. My chamber is 10 times the size of the one at the temple and bedecked in the same ostentatious taste as the rest of the palace. A 4-poster canopy bed that could easily sleep 5 is stuffed with silk pillows. A table near the hearth is decorated with a large bowl of multicolored glass orbs, shining prisms of rainbow light across the plaster walls. Daylight and a slight breeze pour in from the balcony overlooking the gardens, a view Jaya would adore. Viraji, I will see about your bath. Asha backs out of the room in a bow, leaving Devon and me alone.
My apologies about my father, he says quietly.
Why does the general want to see Natesha? You said the Raja punishes men for speaking to his women.
Wives. The Raja punishes them for speaking to his wives without permission. His courtesans are entertainment for his court.
I recoil a step. Raja Tarek is going to share Natesha?
He shares all of his courtesans.
Devon's composure cracks. Deep in his eyes, he looks as though he has been kicked in the chest.
Gautam won't take her to his bed right away. The Raja will expect that privilege first. But afterward, Natesha will spend time with anyone who requests her company.
The wrongness of a woman being passed around like a flask of apong roils my stomach. Courtesans should belong to a single man, as they did to Anu. Do all the benefactors do this?
Only the Raja.
I glance around me. What crooked world have I come to? I set my jaw. Raja Tarek is a monster. Devon comes close and rubs my arms.
He's better to his Ronnies. For your protection, you must obey him.
Does every choice come down to obedience? I whisper.
Yes.
He brushes my arms one more time and steps back. Longing flares inside me for more of his touches. I swallow the desire, locking it down. Do you know why the general stayed behind at the temple?
He came there to attend the Raja's claiming, and he was so impressed by the recipients that he arranged his own.
Jaya. My stomach dips to my ankles. No, he could not have. The general could not have claimed Jaya, not with her scarred cheek and hives. She has to be in Samia. She must be. But the possibility rips the ground out from beneath me. Can you find out if he claimed anyone? My friend Jaya, the one I helped during skill trials, is the only family I have.
I know some of my father's men. I will ask them about your friend.
Tell me as soon as you find out.
I will.
Devon tries for a hopeful smile, but it comes out weak. Asha returns with a small army of veiled serving women, heaving buckets of steaming water and a brass tub. Devon takes that as his cue to leave.
I will return soon.
He bows and squeezes past them out the door. I stifle the urge to call him back. I am not ready to be alone here.
Asha starts to undress me. I pull away and wait for the extra servants to finish filling the tub and leave.
I strip down quickly and slide into the bath. Warm water seeps into my pores, loosening the knots in my bones and removing all traces of Devon's touch on my arms. I cannot understand why he agreed to stay on as my guard. He knows the risks. Yet his nearness relieves some of my apprehension. I want him by my side while I face the tournament proceedings.
Asha scrubs my hair with a bar of soap.
Try as I might, I cannot quit fretting about Jaya. I have no right to complain about the Raja when Jaya's future is so uncertain. Raja Tarak may be a monster, but I will fight to wed him, and God's willing, I will win. A couple of young women welcome themselves into my chamber, walking in without knocking.
She's taller than I thought, one says to the other.
And thinner, adds the second.
Her face isn't entirely unpleasant.
Not entirely. And that hair. Tarek does admire beautiful tresses.
Especially when they are all a woman wears.
They saunter my way, snickering. One of them, with oval eyes and a pouty mouth, yanks my hand up from the side of the tub and tisk-tisks.
Your nails are frightful.
The second young woman tugs on my big toe, which is sticking out of the water.
Hasn't anyone taught you that nail care says you care about your appearance?
Was that question for her or me, I ask. The first young woman answers with all seriousness.
For you?
Then, no, I don't care about my nails.
Clearly,
sniffs the second young woman.
I'm Ishana and this is Pariza.
Kalinda, are you courtesans or wives?
Wives?
Pariza says, hand rising to her throat.
You must learn to tell apart the courtesans from the wives, or you will find a scorpion in your bed.
I laugh, but neither of them join me. Clearing my throat, I ask, How long have you been married to the Raja?
A year.
Pariza sits on my bed. Her bone structure is striking. Her lean face and lofty cheekbones would be a joy to draw.
Tarek claimed us from the Hirani Temple at the same time. We were glad to get away from the sisterhood. Those old crones never let us do anything exciting. Here we can do anything we wish, so long as we stay within the palace grounds.
And it doesn't involve a man, adds Ishana.
She is the more obvious beauty, with her pouty lips and slim oval face. She leans forward and whispers across the room, which is quite pointless.
One of the wives ran away with a guard.
My thoughts fill with Devon, and I am unprepared when Asha dumps a bucket of water over my head. I sink into the tub and sputter to the surface. Ishana smiles.
Tournament jitters?
Or wedding nerves,
says Pariza, speaking to her friend. Ishana's demeanor sobers.
I was more nervous during my rank tournament.
The arena is terrifying, Pariza admits. But for some, being with a man for the first time is scarier.
Ishana laughs, shaking off her mood, and starts for the door. Pariza pats my hand.
Should you survive the tournament, you will have the Raja to yourself on your wedding night. That is Tarek's gift to his brides. After you have him the first time, you will never have him alone again.
She joins Ishana, and they walk toward the door, commenting on the size of my room and the color of my draperies. Asha dumps another bucket of water over my head, and when I reopen my eyes, the Gabby duo is gone. 12. Asha rotates me to face the mirror glass. I gape at my reflection and touch the beadwork on my bodice. The fitted top amplifies my slight curves. The trousers hang low on my hips and then balloon out and tighten again at my ankles. My bare midriff is partially hidden by a shawl draping from my shoulder and sweeping across my chest. Heavy coal lines my eyes, arcing out at the sides in crow wings. Gold powder speckles my eyelids and cheekbones. My hair is down and brushed to a shine. The dark line of henna Priestess Mita drew down my nose has faded, but it is still noticeable. I purse my lips, stained red with passion fruit. Asha clasps her hands together, an accomplished gleam in her eye. "You're a vision, Viraji." She is being generous. After hours of grooming, I nearly pass for pretty. But then I think of Devon's words to me during our journey. "You're beautiful." I wrap my arms around my torso. I have shed more than fabric. Nothing appears to remain of the temple ward from Samia, but beneath this painted mask, I am still that girl. I will not lose sight of her. I dig through my satchel for a reminder of who I am to carry with me. But there is a problem. I don't have pockets. Where am I supposed to hide my slingshot? "Do you intend on needing it for supper?" Asha says. A handsome man in finery fit for the gods enters my chamber and displays a wide smile.
"My wives may be fierce, but they won't spoil a fine meal."
I hold myself tight. Raja Tarek needs no introduction. I recognize his voice from skill trials. Asha bows out of the room, and two Imperial guards position themselves near the door. I look for Devon, but he is not here.
"Kalinda, isn't it?"
Raja Tarek strolls to me and takes the slingshot from my hand, setting it aside. He is younger than I thought. Not an old man, but middle-aged. His is a pampered appearance, a look of long days soaking in the bathhouse and rubbing oils into his skin. His dark hair is short, almost the same length as his beard. Well-trimmed and well-dressed, the Raja carries himself with the ease of someone certain of his place in the world. Or perhaps someone who owns the world. I bow low. "Your Majesty?"
"I would wager those who know you well call you Kali."
"Some do."
"And so will I."
His eyes shine with amusement.
"You look surprised."
"I thought you would be..."
"Older. Fatter. Grayer."
His lips tug up. I have no reply. I cannot agree that, yes, I expected him to be unsightly. But if he were, he would better suit my impression of him during our brief encounter in the claiming chamber. Raja Tarek traces a finger down my arm, setting off a fire of goose flesh.
"Kali, did the priestess tell you why I claimed you?"
"To be your wife?"
"Not just my wife. My final Rani. The importance placed on my 100th Viraji meets and perhaps exceeds that placed on my kindred."
His fingers feather through my hair.
"For that I need a young woman I can mold into a legend. Someone worthy of the role."
I confront him with a glare. I will never be who I once was, but if the gods have indeed brought me here, then they know that I will not bend to him. Not now. Not ever. The Raja grins.
"There's the woman I claimed. I could feel your fiery glare through the blindfold."
I repress a shudder. He is incredibly handsome, but his calculating eyes chill me. He is a charmed cobra that could snap out of its trance and turn on me any second.
"Tell me about your sickness."
His abrupt command catches me off guard. My first instinct is to lie, but since Healer Baka notified him of my illness, I tell the truth. "I have a tendency toward fevers."
"Any other weaknesses?"
The Raja releases my hair to stroke my chin.
"Pride, perhaps?"
His grip tightens on my jaw.
"Or is it disobedience?"
I jerk free and he chuckles.
"I don't like to be told what to do either."
His hand lashes out and clamps down on my chin before I can move away. Holding me captive, he leans in.
General Gotham spoke to me about your impertinence. I won't hear any more tales of your defiance. You are my champion. You will conduct yourself properly. Do we have an understanding?
His threat vibrates to my knees.
Yes.
Raja Tarik lets me go, only to reach for me again. I cringe.
Shh.
His knuckles skim my cheek.
His hot breath stinks of spicy apong.
I do not wish to hurt you.
He brushes my hair off my forehead so tenderly that he could be looking at someone else. Someone he knows well and cares for.
You will defend your throne for me, won't you, love?
I nod, unable to speak. I will fight to win, but not for him.
Captain Nike,
Raja Tarik calls. Devon rounds into the room, his gaze appropriately blank. He has changed his uniform into dark, fitted trousers and a plum jacket with gold embroidery and a stand-up collar. The attire of an Imperial Guard. The Raja kisses the back of my hand, his dry lips lingering against my skin. He looks at me and speaks to Devon.
I needn't remind you of the importance of Kali's safety. Nothing in the world matters more to me than her. I would not entrust her care to many men. Take that to heart.
Yes, Your Majesty.
I will see you soon, love,
Raja Tarik says to me. He kisses my cheek and goes, his two guards marching out behind him. I slump onto my bed and shove my shaking hands beneath my thighs. Devon's controlled voice carries to me.
Did he hurt you?
No. The pain in my jaw has faded. I stare at my lap, confusion twisting my mind around. He spoke to me as if he knows me.
Perhaps he has been waiting for you all his life, and he feels he does.
Devon's quiet answer tugs up my chin. His tender gaze extends across the room, and a warm ache gathers in my chest. Having met Raja Tarik, I am no closer to understanding why he claimed me. He has bound me to him, but my heart is above whatever role he wishes me to play. As I look at Devon, that same heart whispers of a certainty. The gods guided me here to Raja Tarik, but that path also led me to Devon. He glances at the door.
The Ronnies will dine soon.
I follow him into the corridor and see two more Imperial guards. A smile splits my face.
Manas! Yadin, what are you doing here?
The captain promoted us.
Manas stands with his chest thrust out and his shoulders back.
We hope you don't mind,
says Yadin. Not at all. I tug his stiff collar and he smiles shyly. I hope you don't mind the uniform. Manas yanks at his own high neckline.
The jacket will take some getting used to. But look at us. We're Imperial Guards.
You earned it, says Devon.
Let's escort the Viraji to her supper.
He guides the way. Every corridor in the palace is a copy of the last, with the same gold-leafed trim and flowing jewel-toned draperies. I have yet to see any turquoise for which the palace was named. We turn into an outdoor corridor lined with latticework doors opposite arches that open to the garden and the sunny sky. Early evening light streams through the openings, glowing against the palace's alabaster walls. We stop at an inner doorway draped with red silk.
The Tigris Pavilion, Devon says. The wives spend most of their time here.
I waver at the threshold. Are you coming?
Imperial guards aren't permitted inside. If you need us, we will be stationed at this exit.
I bite the inside of my cheek. All of the Ronnies could be like Parisa and Ishana, more concerned with their nails than backbiting. Or they could be as horrible as their reputation, vain and vicious. None of the warrior wives will be my competitors in the tournament, but that does not mean that they will be friendly. but I will not know until I face them. So I step through the door.
13. The Tigris Pavilion is an unroofed courtyard in the center of the wives' wing. A portico borders the black and white tiled area. Silk fabrics flow from the eaves where they are pinned. At the center of the patio, a fountain gurgles a tranquil song. The carvings on the fountain's base complement the outer walls, which are covered in a plastered pattern of Tarachan's scorpion emblem. I circle the area, staying under the shady portico. The pavilion is broken into two parts. In one area, young women lounge on overstuffed floor cushions, where they read books or play games with tiles. The other section is a training ring. I stop by one of the columns that divide the pavilion from the portico and look out at the courtyard. Women wield khandas, haladis, bows, slingshots, metal-tipped spears and shields, axes, javelins, and even an urumi, a weapon made of several flexible whip-like blades. Generally treated as a steel whip, it is the riskiest weapon to master. One lash from an urumi, and a victim's flesh could be sliced so deeply in several places that he or she might never recover. A knife zips past me and sinks into the closest column. I step back and look around the pillar at Parisa. Her hair is pulled back, revealing a deep purple scar from her ear to her neck. A piece of her earlobe has been hacked off. She flings another dagger, embedding the razor end through a target tacked to the post. "Too far left," Ishana says from a bench nearby. Her attention appears to be on the book in her lap, but her assessment was accurate. Parisa missed the center of the target pinned to the pillar by a hand's width to the left.
"Goddess Ki would not approve of that throw."
"Why don't you get off your rump and do it, then?"
Parisa challenges.
Ishana rises and accepts the throwing knife that Parisa offers her. Taking her stance, Ishana hurls the dagger with impressive form. The silver blade revolves in the air, gleaming like a spiraling star, and stabs the center of the target. Ishana reviews her mark and turns to smile at Parisa.
"He would approve."
Parisa notices me in the shadows and purses her lips.
"You clean up well," she says.
"Don't mind her crankiness," Ishana says. She comes to my side and pulls me out into the open. "The Raja sent his summons for tonight, and her name wasn't on it. He hasn't summoned her to his bedchamber in 6 moons.
5!
Parisa shouts to our backs. Ishana tips her head toward me.
6. And the last time she was summoned, she had to share him with another wife and 3 courtesans.
I shudder in repulsion and glance back at Parisa, who is throwing another knife. Her aim is still pulling left. "How did she get her scar?" I ask.
"A souvenir from her rank tournament."
Ishana sits back down on the bench, just out of the range of 2 Ranis practicing sword play, and I see that the book in her lap is Enlil's 100th Rani. Jaya's recitation comes to mind, and longing for her stretches through me.
"Many of us will be glad when the rank tournaments are over. Every time another takes place, we cannot help but remember our own."
Ishana rests her palm on the book, and I see the number 89 dyed in henna on the back of her hand. "What's that?" I ask, touching the number.
"My wifely rank. We all have them."
I search the women before us, looking past their weapons for the numbers on the backs of their hands. Those were not strange lines that I saw on Lakia. They were ones. I consider my own hands, picturing what they would look like with the number 100 branded on them. Ishana rubs the book cover.
"Most people's favorite part of Enlil's 100th Rani is his Viraji winning the tournament, but what happened next was more important. Do you know the rest of the tale?"
I shake my head slowly. I have never heard that there is more to the story.
"I didn't know the rest until I found this text in the palace library," Ishana says. "It says that after Enlil married his final Viraji, men began to emulate the gods and institute their own rank tournaments. But Ki soon became wrought with the loss of so many of her daughters, and she formed a band of young women and trained them for battle in secret. Her followers became warriors in the sisterhood. By the time the next tournament was proposed, the sister warriors loved each other so much that they laid down their weapons and refused to fight. Their bond made them stronger together than they were apart. The land goddess's tradition of raising girls to be warriors became the cornerstone of the sisterhood and carries on today. I scanned the new passages in the book, seeing the full story for myself. I was taught that Ki established the sisterhood, but the rest of the tale was never disclosed. Why did the sisters tell us only part of the story? Why not teach us peace, like Ki taught the sister warriors? I have often wondered the same. Ishana watches the sparring wives with severe focus. Whatever the case may be, the virtue of sisterhood has not been upheld as well as the tournaments. That may be so, but these Ranis are established sister warriors. Their preparation saved their lives in the arena. Does everyone here plan to challenge someone to a duel? I ask. Any Rani could try for first wife rank, but Lakia has yet to be challenged. Ishana smiles sadly. Many practice to forget our past battles. We all bear scars. I study the women closer. Most scars must be deftly concealed by clothes and jewelry and their long hair. But as I look, signs of their hard-fought battles become visible below this flawless veneer. I spot faint scars on arms and legs. Even the impeccable Ishana has a scrape on her back, seen beneath her blouse and extending down, disappearing beneath the waistline of her silk sari. A gong chimes across the courtyard. The Ranis prop their weapons against the wall racks and then pass through a lattice archway bursting with vine flowers. Ishana and I cross the patio with everyone else. As we walk past the weapons rack, I ask, "Have you mastered all of these weapons?" "All the Raja's favored four have. They are Lakia, me," Ishana blushes, "and two courtesans, Anjali and Mathura. Mathura has lived in the palace almost as long as Lakia, since they were our age." Past the archway trellis, we go into a candlelit dining cove. Servants rush to fill chalices with wine. The wives kneel on cushions, congregating around knee-high tables stacked with lavish place settings and mouth-watering dishes smelling of turmeric and coriander. Pariza beats us to a table. "Ishana! Viraji!" Heads snap in my direction, and snatches of whispers fly. The comments I overhear pertain to my lankiness, or plain looks. Nothing is said that I have not heard before, but the judgments still sting. The Rani's flaws, their battle scars, are not at the forefront to be gawked at. But my lack of attractiveness cannot be concealed behind a sari. Ishana sits beside Pariza, and I kneel across from them. They lean their heads together and speak in quiet voices, slightly set apart from the rest of the Ranis. Is that how Jaya and I look together? Separate, in a hall full of people. Hollowness carves out my center. Please let Jaya be safe. Even as I pray, the selfish part of me wishes she were here. I count the number of seats at the tables until the urge to cry goes away. I tally 10 seat cushions at each of 10 tables, but 5 of the tables have empty spots. "Where are the rest of the wives?" I ask. Pariza and Ishana are engrossed in their conversation, but the young woman beside me answers. 3 Ranis are with their infants in the younger nursery. The young woman cradles her bulging abdomen. I slant away, having never seen a belly so huge. The temple had 2 nurseries, a younger one for babies and an older nursery for little girls, but no women with child. The young woman laughs. "I remember the first time I saw a pregnant woman. I thought she was as big as an elephant." I think that this young woman looks like a spider, all swollen stomach and skinny legs. But her face is pretty, and her dark hair is the shiniest at our table. "And Kalinda," I say.
"Shyla." She lifts her hand to show me her rank. "Wife 81.
May I touch your..." She nods,
and rests my palm on her belly. A strange flutter wraps my hand and my eyes go round. Shyla beams.
He likes you.
You know you're having a boy?
No, but if it's a boy, he will be 32nd in line for the throne. Lakia's son is the Raja's heir, but you won't see him. The brethren are raising him at one of their temples.
I vaguely remember that it is tradition for noble heirs to be brought up by the Brotherhood. The brother responsible for training the heir to the throne later becomes the new Raja's head counselor. Depending on how long Raja Tarek's counselor has served the Vani Temple, he may be able to answer questions about my adoption. If anyone can tell me about my family, the brethren can.
Lakia strides into the dining patio, her supple walk all swishing hips and hair. She stands at the head of our table and raises her chalice. Everyone hushes.
Tonight we celebrate the arrival of the Raja's final viragi, she says. Tarek has claimed Kalinda as his champion. She will defend her throne in what will be our final rank tournament.
Nods abound. This marks a major point in history. After this, they will no longer have to worry about jockeying for rank in the arena. There will be no more battle scars.
The opening proceedings for the tournament begin tomorrow night with the declaration ceremony. Should Kalinda uphold her throne, she will join us as a Rani. All welcome our sister queen. Nush. Nush.
They salute me with their chalices and drink. I salute them back and Lakia sits. Cups lower and bowls of food are served. Voices and clinking silverware take over the night. The dishes smell delicious, but my stomach is too upset by Lakia's announcement that the declaration ceremony is tomorrow to eat.
You should try something.
Shyla piles a serving of chickpeas on her plate. Thanks, but I'm not hungry.
I am, but I don't have much room left.
She pats her belly. How long until your delivery?
The midwife says any day now.
Shyla chews on a stalk of palm heart. She is missing two fingers on her left hand. My mouth turns papery as I try not to stare at the stubs near her knuckles where her fingers used to be.
I may miss your tournament. Pregnant women are exempt from fighting, and with the baby coming...
Her concern helps me muster a smile. I am certain it cannot be helped. Beside us, Parisa and Ishana quit chatting and focus their attention over my shoulder. Oh, he's an eyeful, Ishana says, in her not-so-quiet whisper. Where do I know him from? I turn and see Devon waiting near the door with his hands tucked behind him and his head high. He really is a treat for the eyes.
That's Mathura's son, replies Parisa.
She told me about him, Ishana's admiring tone grates my ears. Mathura wasn't exaggerating about his handsomeness. I go still, my mind running. Mathura is one of the Raja's favorite four. Devon's mother is a courtesan. General Gautam is a benefactor. The Raja shares his courtesans with the court. Devon went to the rank tournament to watch his mother fight. Mathura is Devon's mother. Why did he not tell me? Whatever the case may be, I doubt that he has come here to talk about his parentage. He would not set foot in the Tigris Pavilion uninvited without a good reason. Nearly everyone at our table has noticed his presence. I rise and go to meet him. What are you doing? I hiss.
You asked me to tell you when I heard news about your friend.
My stomach reels. Jaya.
Captain Naik,
Lakia calls from our table.
You've interrupted our supper.
Devon steps fully into the light.
My apologies, kindred. I came to deliver some news. A Buddha was spotted near the palace walls.
Utensils ting and voices halt.
Soldiers are searching for him now.
Lakia leans her head in an exaggerated tilt. How good of you to alert us and check on our safety. My lungs squeeze tight. Despite Devon's reassurance that I am safe in the palace, the burner has him spooked.
"Please forgive the intrusion, kindred,"
Devon says as he bows. He whispers to me,
"I will be outside."
Hariza and Ishana have their heads tilted together when I return to the table. Upon my arrival, they separate, and Ishana looks me over.
"You know your guard well."
I shirk their questioning glances and pick at my food in silence. Within minutes, a handful of Ranis finish their meal and leave the table. I excuse myself with them. Shyla bids me goodbye, and Pariza and Ishana lapse into whispers. My senses crackle, aware of Lakia's thinned eyes gazing at my back. I leave the pavilion through the door I came in. Devon waits for me in the empty corridor.
"What did you hear about Jaya?"
"Gautam did not claim her."
I clasp my hands close to my heart.
"Thank you."
"Jaya is safe in Samia, and with the rank tournament luring the benefactors to Vani, that is where she will stay." Devon's smile weakens, and I remember the other reason he came. "Was it the burner who was spotted?" I say.
"Yes. He escaped again, but a Buddha sympathizer was detained for helping him flee."
My insides twist, remembering how close the burner came without my noticing. Devon grips the hilt of his sword.
"The sympathizer was coerced into revealing a Buddha hideaway in the city. Soldiers are headed there now."
I do not know what he means by coerced, but I doubt that Raja Tarek asked politely. "Are you going?" Devon stares out the arched walkway. Mina birds call to one another, their melodic calls echoing in the shadowed garden. No more than a crescent slit, the winking moon offers scant light.
"I'm an imperial guard now. My place is here."
"Then why did you refuse to become an imperial guard the first time you were asked?" Devon leans against the arch column.
"A year ago, I was part of a military caravan, transporting the Raja when Bhutas ambushed us. A gaoler's high wind swept away the others, but I tied the Raja and myself to a boulder. Only we survived, and Raja Tarek offered to promote me to Imperial Guard. I took a position as captain in the army instead."
His voice thickens.
"I left the Brotherhood and became a soldier to be nearer to my younger brother. He, Yatin, and I trained together. Yatin wasn't with us during the ambush, but my brother was. After I secured the Raja, I tried to go back for him, but he was already gone. I have been searching for the Buddhas who killed him since."
Grief rolls off Devon's bunched shoulders. He is not at fault for his brother's death, but if I had saved the Raja instead of Jaya, I would never forgive myself either. "But why did you accept this promotion now?"
"Things have changed."
"Such as?" As counterintuitive as it may be, I wish for him to say that he stayed to be near me, that I am the change. Devon scrubs a hand across his jaw. I doubt that he has slept more than an hour at a time since we left Samia.
"I have hunted Buddhas for many moons, but I have never been as close to them as I have these past days. So long as the burner is near you, I will be too."
"I see." I rein in my disappointment. "I am bait." Devon turns to me, his eyes sparking with temper.
"I did not accept this advancement solely to serve the Empire, Kali. You are the people's champion and the Viraji, but let there be no mistake. You are not bait."
His sudden intensity pulls at me. I soften my expression, extending a silent apology for misunderstanding him. His stance relaxes, like a taut bow released. The shield of distance he carries with him falls bit by bit, and the crease between his brows gradually smooths away. Footsteps sound down the corridor. Devon straightens, morphing back into detached Captain Nike. Beneath his reserved exterior, he is still Devon. 14. Today is not a day to miss my tonic dosage. I wake early, dawn's flaxen light easing through my bedchamber, and draw a swig from one of my remaining vials. With my nose scrunched from the pungent taste, I notice a book on the other half of my bed that was not there when I fell asleep. I glance around my empty chamber and pick up the old text. Buta Origins. Gooseflesh springs up my arms. I open the cover and flip through the pages, pausing on a drawing of Anu. Four mortals kneel before the sky god as he offers them fragments of light he carved from the sun with his mighty kanda. I have seen countless images of Anu, but never this one. The caption reads, Anu bestowed four mortals with shafts of his power. His visitation was later documented in the Jala, a record of Buddha heritage. In his visit, Anu's light elevated these mortals to half-gods, the highest form of mortal reincarnation. Questions cram my mind. Half-gods? But Buddhas are offspring of the demon Kur, the ruler of the void. I continue flipping through the pages, and the same several words and phrases stand out. Sky god. Buddhas. Half-gods. Good morning, Viraji. I slam the book shut and look up. Asha carries in a breakfast tray and slides it onto my bedside table. I stash Buddha origins under the covers, my thoughts circling deeper into perplexity. I eat my breakfast, a bowl of honey-drizzled yogurt, and Asha tidies my chamber. Her heavy black veil conceals all but her downcast eyes. None of the other servants wear such a veil, and I wonder what she is hiding. She picks up my satchel from the bedpost where I had slung it, and one of my vials falls out and shatters on the floor. She kneels to sop up the mess. I'm so sorry, she says. Leave it, I say. I step down off my bed, dodging broken glass. Asha continues to work. I said leave it! She covers her face in defense and backs out of my chamber in a bow. I expel a sigh and clean up. Asha did not mean to break my tonic vial, but she still shortened my remedy supply to about 8 days. I only have one full vial and a bit left. I dress, pleating my sari between my legs for training, and then put the strange book in my satchel along with the remaining vials. I dig the tonic formula out of my satchel pocket and skim the ingredients. Most are herbs that I recognize, but I pause on the final two. White baneberry and snake root. Frowning, I reread the list. Jaya used to grow white baneberry and snake root. They are both poisonous. That does not make sense. Healer Baka never told me what was in her remedy, but she would never feed me poison. She must have written the formula wrong. Asha returns, her step wary. I tuck the tonic formula into the waistband of my trousers. I'm sorry for snapping at you, I say. Startled, her eyes swerve to mine. You won't punish me? No, it was an accident. Bless you, Viraji. Bless you. She shielded her face from me before when I was angry, thinking that I would strike out at her. Is that what the other Ranis do? How did you come to serve here, Asha? I ask. I was claimed. You were raised by the sisterhood? I consider her calm, dark eyes, and picture her wearing a blue sari like other temple wards. The kindred accompanied the Raja to my temple and claimed several wards to serve the Ranis. I have been here nearly 2 years. So it is possible to return for Jaya and claim her. My heart flutters, knowing that our plan could work, but I am ashamed of my impatience with Asha. She shares my upbringing. I could have just as easily been claimed as a servant. I truly am sorry. Though I cannot see the rest of her face, her eyes warm. She picks up the breakfast tray, and I follow her out. Manas waits in the quiet corridor.
Morning, Viraji.
He looks ready to keel over. He must have been outside my door all night. Where is Captain Ike? I say.
Off duty?
You're up early. Most of the Ranis are late rousers. He He tries to subtly prod me back inside my chamber with his gaze. I could wait for Devon, but I start down the hall. Mana stays with me.
Where are you going?
We pass a mirror glass on the wall, and I glimpse my reflection. The henna line down my nose has faded even more, but I am still marked as an intended bride. The Tiger's Pavilion. I have training to do. An axe whirls across the courtyard and impales itself in a pillar with a solid thunk. I round the corner of the portico and see Lakia unbend from her throwing stance. We are the only two people here.
Another early riser!
Annoyance clips her tone. She stalks to the axe and yanks it from the target.
No one else has been up this early with me since...
Her eyes taper to incisive slits.
I'll come back.
Lakia shoves the axe at me and I catch it on reflex.
The Raja's new courtesan has a mouth on her.
She has been here just one night, yet she has convinced some of the courtesans who were not already clamoring for your rank to step forward as challengers. She said you spent your childhood in a sickbed and cannot fight. Her gaze rolls down me.
She also said you are shaped like bamboo and your personality is just as flat.
Natasha, I grip down on the axe.
I can fight.
Lakia wrenches the axe from my hands.
Then pick your weapon.
And spar with you? My insides shake. Lakia has killed more opponents in the arena than any other Rani. She twirls the axe at her side.
Did you come here to train or not?
I do not see how sparring with Lakia will end well for me, but if I refuse, the rumors about me will worsen. I do not need a reputation as a poor fighter and a coward. I select a staff from the weapons rack. Lakia sets her axe aside with a smirk.
To be fair,
she gestures me forward. In her obscenely short training sari, more scars are visible on her legs. I swing at her head, and she sidesteps me.
You aren't as pretty as I thought you would be.
You are. I hold up the staff, preparing to block. She paces sideways.
Do you know how long I have waited for Tarek to choose his final wife? I have been forced to watch him wed 99 other women. 99!
Her fist attacks too swiftly for me to evade. I back away, jaw on fire.
Don't you mean 98? You were claimed with your older sister, weren't you?
Lakia kicks me in the middle. I stumble back against the wall. She slams her fist into my gut precisely where she kicked me. I clutch my pained abdomen, groaning through my teeth.
Do not speak of her.
Lakia yanks the staff from my grip and presses it across my neck. You aren't the only one who has to fight for rank. The first wife position is the most coveted. Any of the wives may challenge me. I push against her, but with the wall behind me, she has the leverage.
After you, she says, there will be no more tournaments, no more challengers, no more wives, no more proving my devotion.
She drives the staff down on my jugular, sealing off my breath. My lungs reach into the rest of my body for air. Yatin is outside. He replaced Manas when we reached the pavilion, but my mouth gasps soundlessly for his help. Lakia leans forward, her weight still bearing down on my gullet. A veil of blackness falls over my vision.
You're the 100th Viraji Tarek traveled far and wide for, she says. Pathetic.
She lets me go. I slide to the ground, wheezing. Lakia drops the staff, and it clatters near my head.
Tarek is my husband. Win your tournament, if you can. But when it is over, I will be his kindred forevermore.
Through my splotchy sight, I see her strut away. I sag against the floor and cough.
Kalinda? Kalinda!
I look up to see Shyla bending over me. I try to answer her, but my voice box aches. She toddles off in a hurry, and I pull myself up to half-sitting. Hoarse chunks of air burst in and out of me.
Kali!
Devon races across the patio. Yatin lumbers behind him with waddling Shyla. Devon stoops over me.
What happened?
Coughing slows my reply.
Lakia!
Let's get you to a healer.
Devon lifts me to my feet, and Shyla grips her round belly, puffing out her cheeks with labored breaths. Devon motions to Yatin.
Better bring her, too.
The infirmary, located in the central palace, smells familiar. Of ground ginger. An elderly woman brews me a cup of ginger tea and advises me to sip it slowly. Yatin has gone to help Shyla to her bedchamber, and the healer sent a midwife after them. According to her, Shyla should deliver her baby by day's end. Devon stands guard at the end of my cot. He is unshaven, his eyes red-rimmed. He must have been up all night searching for the burner. How is he still on his feet? The healer returns with a second cup of hot tea and hands it to him.
You need this as much as the Viraji.
He does not take it.
I'm on duty.
So am I.
The healer squints at him, multiplying her wrinkles. Devon accepts the tea, and, with more prodding from the healer, he sits beside me on the cot. He stretches out his legs, crossing his dirty boots. Tendrils of steam curl up from our cups, fogging our faces. The healer goes to her desk to write in her logbook.
What happened?
He asks. I rub my sore throat.
Lakia asked me to spar.
A troubled frown lengthens his face.
You aren't the first person her temper has sent to the infirmary. What happened between you?
She threatened me, in a sense. I could not care less about Lakia's rank. She could have the Raja to herself, and I would be happier for it.
Keep your distance, Kali. Everyone in the palace sidesteps the kindred.
I nod, and Devon nestles his delicate teacup in his big hands. You didn't tell me your mother is one of the Raja's courtesans, I say.
I told you she's a courtesan. Whose courtesan didn't seem relevant?
He exhibits no frustration, merely resignation.
She won't challenge you. Her tournament days are over.
My fingers relax on my drink. Thank the gods I did not have to decide between his mother's life and my own. How often do you see your mother, I say?
Not often. I love my mother, but courtesans don't raise their children. My brother and I were brought up by nursemaids. He was my only family for a long time.
You must have loved him very much, I say, thinking of Jaya.
Yes, I did.
He sets his tea aside and unbuttons the top of his jacket, releasing his neck from the strangling collar.
There is still no sign of the burner, he says. He was not captured in the raid, but the Raja wants us to stay on the lookout. He believes the burner may be near the palace.
Near the palace? Or inside it? The burner must be skilled at hiding. Anyone who looks at him would remember his distinctive eyes. He must not have been far from me since we met. He may have even been close enough to sneak into my chamber and leave something on my bed. The notion turns my tongue to cotton. I want to tell Devon about Buddha origins, but it must wait. The healer could be listening. Yatin appears in the doorway.
Captain, the Viraji's servant is looking for her. Her midday meal is being served in her chamber.
Devon stands and buttons up his jacket.
I will take her.
The healer rushes over, wagging a finger at Yatin.
The Viraji needs to finish her tea and Captain Naik needs to rest.
I will rest right after I escort the Viraji to her chamber, says Devon.
Though the old healer is half his size and more than three times his age, she does not back down.
Captain, I will confine you to the infirmary if you do not go directly to your quarters.
Go on, I say to Devon.
Yatin will take me back to my room.
Devin swallows and nods. He goes out into the corridor to relay orders to Yatin. The healer holds up the teapot.
More, Viraji?
No, thank you.
The healer pours herself a cup, and I remember the tonic formula tucked at my waistband.
But, if I may ask, what do you know about white baneberry and snake root?
The healer carries her teacup over to me.
They are very rare and highly poisonous herbs. Some used to believe they could ward off Buddha powers. Brickmakers ground them into powder and added the powder to their building clay for protection. Certain areas of the palace are rumored to have been constructed with the poison-infused bricks.
Do they truly repel Buddha powers?
Cannot say. In all my years of medicine, I have never seen them used against Buddhas.
The healer takes my empty cup.
You should be well enough to attend tonight's ceremony.
Thank you. My throat feels better. My mind, however, is not relieved. Healer Baka had somehow gotten her hands on these rare herbs, but I doubt that I will find them on the palace grounds. So then why did she give me the formula? Without the ingredients, I have no chance of concocting more. Healer Baka knew I would need my tonic to sustain me through the tournament. I wish that I could pen her a letter, but I am not allowed contact with those outside the palace. Based on what this healer said, Healer Baka must have known she was feeding me toxins. But how could I have ingested poison for over a year and yet still live? Unless my tonic does more than lower my fevers. Yatin appears at the doorway.
Ready, Viraji?
Yes. I fasten on a smile and push my thoughts of poisons away. I have tonight's ceremony to prepare for. 15. My guards stop shy of the high-arched doorway leading to the throne room. I press a hand to my churning stomach. I am as unsettled as I was before the claiming, only then I had Jaya by my side. I have never missed her more than I do now. Devin maintains a proper distance, but compensates for the gap between us with his soothing tone.
Approach the throne and the Raja will receive you.
My chin ticks up, and I step into the throne room. Stunning young women fill the long, grand hall, which is brightened by chandelier lamps. Cloth rustles as nearly 100 veiled Ranis and over 200 courtesans turn on the red and gold satin floor cushions, where they are kneeling to watch me enter. A center aisle separates the Ranis from the courtesans. In addition to the numbers dyed on the back of their hands, the Ranis are set apart from the courtesans by their loose hair and the veils hanging from their noses to their chins. Their veils are a public sign of devotion to their husband. Their lips are for his eyes only, the same as their other concealed body parts. Courtesans wear no veil, as they are not married. Their hair is tied in a single thick braid down their backs, and their revealing garments lack the refinement of the Rani's attire. Pariza and Ishana smile from their seats. Shyla is not here. She is with her newborn. Soon after I left the infirmary, word came that she had delivered a baby girl. A dozen brethren stand off to the side, their ivory robes a calming force. A crimson carpet muffles my footsteps down the center aisle. Raja Tarek waits at the other end, in a high-backed gold throne set between two purple draperies swooping from ceiling to floor. He reclines to one side with his elbow on the armrest, casual in his stance, though his intense gaze is anything but. I cannot tear free of his stare. The carpet ends at the base of the dais. Natasha kneels to my left, facing the Raja. She does not deign to give me a glance, but Lakia glares. The kindred occupies her own throne, set beside the Raja's. A third throne stands empty, to my right. Raja Tarek's gleaming eyes range over me from head to toe. I grit my teeth. He raises a hand loaded with gem-encrusted rings.
Kneel.
he says to me. I lower to the floor and rest my forehead against the cool marble. The court goes as silent as the moon. My quick breaths resound through my head, marking time.